Welcome to Revive. It's about that time. Welcome to Revive. It's about that time.
All I need is one mic.
You know what time it is. Open up your ears. You know what time it is. Open up your mind. It's about that time. It's your girl POC. Sunday morning. Good morning, man. What's up with you guys out there? Today is Sunday, January 28th. I need you guys to wake up. We'll meet your girl POC each and every Sunday here on Time for an Awakening. We coming live on your airwaves. We revive your airwaves each and every Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. here on Time for an Awakening. But you can find us on reviveisalive.com. Once again, that's reviveisalive.com. You can go ahead and click that link in my bio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at revive_POC. Go ahead and click that link so you can stay locked with us here on Revive Radio, man. And you can also, while you're on reviveisalive.com, you can go ahead and subscribe to that newsletter. Once again, subscribe to that newsletter. It comes out each and every month. It only comes out one time a month, so we are not spamming your inbox. We just try and put some knowledge. We try and put some knowledge out there for you guys, man. We're trying to educate and re-educate you guys each and every time we get on these airways. So you already know we got some things coming down the pipeline for you guys, and we need you guys to stay locked. In order to do that, you got to subscribe to that newsletter. Yo, Harmony, how you feeling? It's Sunday morning. You got your girl Harmony, the God is back in the building. She decided to come to work today. She was still late. I ain't gonna hold you. I'm snitching. She was definitely late today, man. I need some, man. Yo, I'm hiring. What's up? I'm hiring. Hit me up. revive.poc@gmail.com, man. I'm hiring. What's up? First and foremost, I need some testosterone. So if you are a male who is looking to get into the radio world, man, definitely hit me up, because I am looking for some testosterone on this team. We need some male opinions. We need, you know what I'm saying? It'd be something, you know, a little masculinity around this joint somewhere. But what's up with you, Harmony? Thank you for coming to work today. I appreciate it. You know how you gotta just say thank you sometimes. I just want to say thank you. I appreciate you for coming to work today.
Look, when I come in the building, I'm always on time. It doesn't even have to be the mechanical time, but when I step into the room, ain't no telling when up.
AKA you a hot ass mess. It's like, nah. But definitely, man, wake up, man. Definitely give us a call this morning, 215-490-9832. If you want to just get something off your chest, some good weekend talk, something that happened over the weekend, somebody, you know what I'm saying, pissed you off and you want to let it out over air, man, we want to know. 215-490-9832. And you do not want to miss What's Buzzing coming up, hosted by Keith Taylor from the Left Side of Politics, coming up later in the show. That's going to be an amazing conversation. We're going to be talking a little bit about the DACA situation and the government shutdown. We haven't spoke about that yet here on Revive, so we definitely got to put that information out for you guys so you know exactly what went down and what's still going down right now. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of things that are still going down that we do not know about because it's not being publicized as much as it should be. And we're not highlighting, you know, the whole Donald Trump situation. We're just giving you guys the actual factuals. You know what I mean? We're giving you guys the actual factuals here on Revive. Harmony, what you about to say?
No, I wasn't about to say anything. We haven't had Keith, so I'm excited to you know, hear that conversation with you and Keith, definitely.
Definitely, man. He been working. I can't even hold him. He been working. So I know for a fact that this is going to be a great, great show. And you definitely don't want to miss our special guest coming up, Sharon Lewis, man. She's actually out here doing her thing. She's going to be telling us a little bit about her movies that she's creating. She's a director. I think this is going to be an amazing conversation. She's a black woman out there doing her thing. Speaking, you know, about black women out there doing her thing, we're going to highlight some topics and everything surrounding the Grammys earlier that came out earlier yesterday too. So we definitely gonna put that out there. I don't want to spend too much time on the Grammys though, cause you know, but I definitely want to talk about these outfits. They came to slay this year. Jay-Z and Beyonce did their thing, but I don't want to talk about that just yet.
Why why are you hating on the Grammys, though? This is a great time right now. These nominations is like fire. So I'm excited for the Grammys.
I mean, I just haven't jumped on the bandwagon. I do want to, you know, see the red carpet. That's more my stilo. You know, I'm more into what the red carpet is about to look like.
On the red carpet. That's what we need to be on, that red carpet.
Oh, it's coming soon. It's definitely coming soon. I already feel that in the air. It's definitely coming soon. Speaking of what's coming soon, February 5th is coming soon, man. Revive will be 1 year old. I cannot wait. Revive will be turning 1 year. 1 year's what?
I think it's just 1 year. It's no S. No plural.
It's alright. That was a good one. Alright, you right. Revive will be turning one. How about that? Revive will be turning one February 5th. I'm really excited about that, man. I'm really, truly excited about that because they always say the first year is the hardest year, and it definitely was. A lot of bloodshed, tears dripping, man, a lot of no sleeping, like just a lot going on that was like, yo, do we really want this? Is this something we really trying to do? Like Harmony showing up to work late in the fourth quarter, you know what I'm saying? We about to go into overtime, and you over here showing up late, ain't showing up at all. I'm telling everybody, you know what I'm saying? I'm telling everybody.
I'm so excited for this 1 year anniversary, definitely. So stay tuned for the guests for the show. It's gonna be like one to remember. But what I want to ask you, POC, since you like putting people on the spot, it is your 1 year anniversary coming up, and I just want to know, like, tell the people a little bit, like a little recap of what, you know, interests you the most about your last year that you have learned. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I mean, you could have worded it a little different. You know what I'm saying? That's why I asked the question. Psych, nah. But yes, this is coming up February 5th. We actually going to be on DG when the anniversary comes. So it's going to be on DG. So you guys can definitely tune in on DG. But to answer Harmony's question, one thing that I...
you know, you learned from last year, something that you can take away or something that you want to push forward, what you want to see more in a year coming, because you did a lot in your first year, like a lot in your first year. So
that's because I'm a beast. I'm a beast. I'm in a beast mode. Yes. Every day, all day. I beast out. Right. You see me, I was trying to pat myself on the back. I don't think they saw that because it's radio. They couldn't see it, but they couldn't see it, right? But no, I would say one thing that I have learned the most is I have learned to accept the word no. Mm-hmm. Before this first year, before February 5th, 2017, you couldn't tell me no. And I'm like, what? But I'm still like, what? Don't get me wrong. But I'm okay with accepting the word no, because that has pushed me 10 times harder. That has pushed me 10 times harder to keep going. And then it also was a couple no's where there were actual lessons in that no. So it wasn't like no, you're not picked ever. It's like, no, you're not picked right now, but if you work on X, Y, and Z, then we're going to give you this call back, or then we're going to make sure that you are in the next lineup or X, Y. So that's something that I have definitely embraced in my first years, that no doesn't mean stop. No doesn't mean, you know, quit. No doesn't mean give up. No just means to keep going and just you get it done. You know what I'm saying? Get it done. You're missing something. You didn't dot this I and you didn't cross this T. So just keep going until both of them are dotted and crossed. So I'm like, oh, all right, bet. I get you. Thank you for that advice. So that's one thing that I learned from this year. So I can't wait, man. I can't wait to see what year two got coming. I think year two is going to be amazing. It has already started off amazing. So I know for a fact year two is going.
Change your lingo. It's no. It's going to be amazing, not think.
Okay, you're right. I know it's going to be amazing. I feel it. It's going to be amazing. I'm going to manifest it. You know what I'm saying? I know it's going to be lit because I wrote it. You know, I put it out there. You all hype in the background, man. I love you, dog. I swear you're my biggest fan. But, yes, that is something that I'm looking forward to in 2018, is just having an enjoyable time. But the only thing about it, though, is Revive is going to have to take, like, a huge break in the middle of the year. And that's because I'm traveling. So it's not like the platform is not going to be live. Revive will always be live. It's just that I won't be on air. I will be doing more so videos, I guess you would say, live recordings, live feeds, different things like that, because I'll be doing a lot of traveling in the middle of the year, and I'll be gone for a good, month and a half. I'll be traveling with Tab Money. Me and Tab about to go on an adventure on our favorite rocket ship, so I'm really excited about that. But the only thing is, I'm going to be leaving my baby, you know what I'm saying? And I would love to leave it with a babysitter, don't get me wrong, but I'm one of those parents.
Don't nobody take care of your baby like you take care of your baby. But I feel like you can still be going live sometimes while you're there. I don't know if you told the people where you're going, but.
No, that's a lot. You got to have equipment. You got to have a producer. And I'm not saying that it can't get done. It definitely can get done. I'm going to bring my little iPhone 6 Plus. You know, I'm pressed, you know, finally. It's 11:11 too, people. Make sure you guys make that wish. But, yeah, so I'm going to. I'm going to try as much as possible because definitely where I'm going is no Wi-Fi. So I'm going to try as much as possible to get as much done. I got my voice recorder, so I think that that's going to help me a lot with my in-person interviews as we're walking around and doing what we're doing and going in and out of different schools and different communities. So I think that that's going to help. But as far as, like, hearing me live, like, yo, you know what time it is, you know, I think that's going to be kind of hard. But I'm not putting that out there because I'm going to try my best. And if I'm going to be with Tab ain't, you know what I'm saying? Tab ain't letting me sleep. So I know for a fact we're going to try and make this happen.
Right. No, you definitely have to make that happen. It's no excuses. No naps. Revive is alive. Revive is alive.
Why you playing, man? We just lost a caller. We lost about 10 listeners. Like, stop playing, man. But definitely, you play too much. Yo, you know who gave me that much energy that you're giving these people right now?
What?
DMX. I went to see DMX last night. Oh, my God. Where my dogs at, right? Oh, here you go. But yes, man, DMX, he did his thing last night. 48 years old and still getting it. He got that belly, you hear me? He took off that hoodie. I was like, oh, look at that little belly. That is him. Like, I had a great, great, enjoyable time. He was late as I don't know what. He put a Lauryn Hill on us last night. The show started at like 8. He didn't get there to like 12:30. I was like, yo, what is going on? And just when I thought I was really about to leave, like, everybody was walking out. Everybody was like, yo, we about to leave. X, Y, and Z. Next, you know, all you hear is, girl. Like, he just, girl. Everybody was like, oh. Then he just came out, started barking. Everything just went live. He is pure energy. Like, when I say he is pure energy, he is pure. That's him. You know what I mean? Like, all the songs that we used to listen to, seeing him on TV, the videos, everything like that. This was my first time ever seeing him in person. And that is truly him. That is not no fake. That is not no front. That is my guy, DMX. And he even prayed, yo. I was so happy. I was, because, you know, everybody went, you know, Webb's like, yo, was he losing it? He going all spiritual, X, Y, and Z? No. Sometimes you need a spiritual presence in order to stay sane and centered and balanced in this game. You hear me? Especially the media, entertainment, whatever it may be, right? But he prayed on his way out. And how he did his prayer was magnificent. I was tuned in. I closed my eyes and everything. I'm like, yo, he's really praying right now. And I don't know what y'all getting out of it, but I'm getting something out of this. So I enjoyed myself last night. Shout out to DMX for coming through Philly. Even though you was late, man, you definitely get some thumbs down for that 2 to 3 hour tardiness right there. Everybody show up to work late. What, you know what I'm saying? It's something in the water.
On time. You are just looking at mechanical time.
No. Show says 8 o'clock, not 12:30. And then, yo, he has some bum... I mean, some whack rappers come before him. And when I tell you, the entire city of Philadelphia booed them. They couldn't even get words out. One of them actually stopped his performance and said, y'all got to get some credit to the people who don't have nothing to do with DMX. When I tell you, the boos got triple times louder, if that's even a phrase, and triple times louder, like, boo, like, went all the way in. Because, yo, we're here to see DMX. Like, how you gonna tell us to get some credit to you? We didn't even know you were here. Who are you? You don't even go here. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, who are you? Did they introduce you, or did you just come on the stage? Like, he came out of nowhere. And then what really was bad, the last guy who performed, he came out like around 11:30. So when he came out like 11:30, when they started playing music, we automatically assumed it was gonna be DMX. So the whole crowd, like, shifted back to paying attention to the stage. But when he came out and it wasn't DMX, boy, did he get it. Oh my God, he got it good. He tried to rap over them boos to the point where he was just like, F it, like, just F it. And just, he didn't necessarily walk off stage. He just was like, just start talking. He didn't rap anymore. He just started talking, like trying to explain his story and who he was and why we deserve to listen to him. Like, no, just boo, get out of here. DMX ruined all of that for both of you. Like, just get out of there.
Y'all gotta respect the artist, though. Like, everybody trying to, you know, everybody trying to make it. Y'all gotta respect them. And a little trying to get y'all ready for DMX. How y'all gonna boot him? You probably was the main one.
Nah, I wasn't booed. I didn't have no more energy to boo. But no, like, I do agree with you. Definitely respect the artist, because I feel you. Like, I put an artist showcase last weekend, and I was like, respect the artist. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, DMX ruined it, because it didn't start on time. For like the first 2 hours of the show, we were just listening to regular music. You know what I mean? So by the time we all get in there, and we get in there in a state of mind, if that makes sense. You know, we're walking into this concert in a state of mind. And then when you get in the concert, you're spending, you know, $13+ to stay in that state of mind. And then next, you know, it just starts going away because time, mechanical time, is just ticking. You hear me?
What did it want from me?
So by the time you know what I'm saying, you see all that, everybody just blown. Like, nobody wants to pay attention to you. We want to know where the show at, what we paid our money for, what's up. You know what I'm saying? If they would have came on at 8 and they came on at 9 and DMX would follow up at 10, we'd have been perfectly fine. But I'm talking about 8, no guess. 9, no guess. 10, no guess. 10:30, boo. 11:30, boo. 12:30, what these niggas want, bro? You know what I'm saying? So you already know, like, we was just blown. But you know, he still got it. DMX got a bra thrown at him. I was like, yo, he still got it. They threw the bra on. So then he invited Shorty up on the stage, and she came up on the stage. She was up on the stage all night, party. I was like, yo, DMX still got it. He think it's the 90s for real. This is not the early 2000s at all. He got a bra, bro. I was so happy. I was like, yo, this is official DMX concert. Like, I was really, really excited about that.
That's crazy. But nowadays, you really gotta watch out for who you bring up on the stage, because I don't know what's in the water, but
you know what I'm saying? Something is definitely in the water. But
he's not looking the age these days.
Oh no, everybody in there was definitely over the age. It was old. Nobody was in there young. Nobody right now who's in college even know who DMX is.
Look, it's a thing called fake IDs and all types of things. I'm just saying. I never got one, but I'm just saying.
I mean, I don't care. I got a fake ID. I don't care. I had the best fake ID ever. It got me everywhere I needed to go. I was young for a very long time. I ain't even gonna hold you. I was always the youngest person, man. Give me a call, man. I want to know how you feel. If you was in DMX concert last night and you was pissed because he was late, I want to hear about it. 215-490-9832. If you haven't even been to a concert and somebody showed up 3 to 4 hours late, I want to hear about your experience here on Revive. Once again, that number is 215-490-9832. We're going to go to a quick commercial break. Right out of this quick commercial break, we'll be back talking to you guys live on Revive. Click that link in my bio, reviveisalive.com. We got our guests coming up as well. Make sure you guys stay tuned. Sharon Lewis, Brown Girls Begins. It's going to be an amazing conversation. We got your girl Harmony, the goddess, in the building. Revive_POC on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Go ahead and click that link. We'll be right back.
You know that teens now spend more than 7.5 hours a day in front of a screen? Wow, that's a long time.
More and more people are getting attached to technology and are therefore not getting enough exercise. This act can lead to a growth in obesity. That is why it is important to go outside and get some exercise! Exercise controls weight and also reduces depression and anxiety. Do some form of exercise at least 3 times a week. Teens who exercise are 36% less likely to develop brain tumors. Take a stand against obesity and exercise every few days. This will help in the long run and will lead you to a happier...
you understand the true meaning of how money works and how someone may make money and manage their money? If you do, you know what financial literacy is. Financial literacy deals with managing money, how he or she can invest it, and how it is used to handle your everyday life expenses. So the next time you are applying for that credit card at your favorite store, or you are taking out student loans that you really don't need, make yourself aware of the risk you could be taking if you are not knowledgeable. It could haunt you for the rest of your life. For more...
POC host Revive. We back live, man. We reviving your airways each and every Sunday here on Time for an Awakening, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., man. Wake up. We'll meet your girl POC each and every Sunday, man. I need you guys to spread the word, spread the message that we are live right now, and we are live each and every week. We go live on Wednesday, each and every winning Wednesday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. here on Time for an Awakening, and we go live each and every Sunday for the Sunday edition, that Good Morning Talk Radio, that good Sunday Morning Talk Radio, man, to get you guys ready for the week up and at them right at their throats, man. Take over 2018. We trying to put that inspirational, motivational out for the people, man. Harmony, you been slipping with the inspirational, motivational. Where you been? Where you been at?
I'm here now. I think every day, every time we get on the air, it's something motivational that you speak, whether it comes from me, whether it comes from your girl POC, whether it comes from Tyler, whether it comes from Tap Money, whether it comes from Keith, the left side of politics. So it's always motivation. Motivation is just there, baby. You don't have to be a specific segment. I always get that word wrong. Like, I always, never mind.
You just finessing. Like, you just finessed your way all the way out of you not doing what you're supposed to be doing. You hear what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying. But I do want to make sure I mention this to you guys as well. We are looking for some dope bloggers, journalists, and freelance photographers for our website, Revive is Alive, man. We need some freelance work from you guys. We are looking for some people who are ready to work. We are looking for some people who are ready to connect, build, and add content to our website. So once again, you can hit us up at revive.poc@gmail.com. We are also looking for some sponsorships, and we got some advertising packages coming out for you guys as well. So make sure you guys stay in the loop for that, and you can do that by subscribing to reviveisalive.com newsletter. Make sure you guys go do that. But we have our first guest coming up on Revive today, man. I'm excited to be speaking with her because the amazing work that she's putting out. Yo, Harmony, who we got coming on the Revive platform today?
Yes, we have the amazing director and writer Sharon Lewis, who infuses her filmmaking with a sense of cinematic wonder and sociopolitical wokeness. So we definitely welcome her to the platform. We're so excited to bring you on. Hello.
Oh, my gosh. I love that. Cinematic wonder?
How are you? How are you doing, Miss Lewis? Good morning.
Good morning. What a great way to start the Sunday morning. Yes. It's a little thematic wonder.
And I know we just introduced you, but I definitely want you to go ahead and introduce yourself for the listening audience and know exactly who we're speaking with.
Well, let me tell you, I have been in this business of entertainment for 25 years, both in front of the camera and behind the camera. And I've hosted and I've won awards and all of that. And I have to say, that this time right now is unlike any other time. I think we are experiencing some wokeness that's happening. Mm-hmm. I really do. I remember being in Los Angeles, a struggling actor. This is about 13 years ago. No, probably 20 years ago. And there was not one, and I know this is hard to believe, but not one black drama ever. And so I was auditioning for stuff like CW and sitcoms. There were no dramatic roles for black actresses. And I have to say that there has been a shift and a change.
Oh, definitely.
And the fact that Brown Girl Begins is coming out, which is my feature film, and it's a sci-fi, and it's in the company of Black Panther and A Wrinkle in Time. Imagine that we can name more than one film.
Wow. Wow. And that's exactly why we're ready to have you on this show today. And one thing that you just said is that, you know, you're experiencing a little wokeness. One thing that I am learning that I'm experiencing as well is that people are starting to work woke. Like, you know, Angela Rye has that movement going around, like, you gotta, you know, faith without work is dead. So just putting out the understanding that you have to work woke at the same time. You can't just be woke. You gotta put that work in while you're woke all at the same time.
Yeah, and also not to forget that people have been working, right?
Yes.
But this didn't just happen overnight. Like, this didn't just sort of wake up and there was an Ava DuVernay. There were all the people that went before, like the Julie Dashes, the Usain Palsy, you know, Haile Jerima. Like, there are a whole bunch of people who've been laying down the groundwork before. And I think that's important as well.
Definitely. And so did you start out doing sitcoms and acting before you became a director, or did you jump right in being a director?
So I never did a sitcom. Okay. I even if I had wanted to, there was no way I could book a sitcom. Being from Canada, they were like, we're not no, this isn't, you know, this isn't urban enough is what they would say, which we all know what that is code for, and what they were looking for. So I never actually did a sitcom, but what I did do was I started as an actor, and the first film that I booked was the lead role in this film called Rude. And I played Rude, and she was this DJ in a black community, and it happens over Easter weekend. And it's actually about an Easter weekend where people get woke. So it battled like homophobia and sexism and abortion, and it was the first film by a black director, black producer, and all black cast that came out of Canada. The first film, and it went to Cannes.
That's awesome. And does, well, speaking of Canada, does Canada have like a film festival, as you know, highlighted, such as the Sundance Film Festival? Does Canada have something like that?
Toronto has one of the biggest film festivals in the world. So there's five big film festivals, and one of them is called the Toronto International Film Festival. So TIFF is probably second to Cannes.
Could you,
so there's, in terms of prestige and distribution and a predictor of what films will go on to win the Oscars. So it probably goes Cannes, TIFF, Sundance, Berlin, and probably Tribeca, I would throw in.
Okay.
Huge film festival here.
Could you break down a little bit to our listening audience what actually goes down at a film festival, like the you know, the process, what it takes to even enter your film into a film festival? How does it actually go? Can you break that down? Because I'm a little ignorant myself.
So what happens with a film, say, for example, our film, which is a very indie film, compared to, say, Moonlight, which is also an indie film, but had Brad Pitt behind it. It had a big distribution company behind it. The budget for Moonlight was $1 million. But the marketing budget is rumored to be about $3 million for that film. So that's how you saw it on billboards and ads, and there was a big push behind it. Brown Girl Begins, our film was made for less than $350,000, and our marketing budget is probably about the cost of a, I don't know, an ice cream sandwich. You know, it's small. It's a small budget, but a very, very dedicated team behind it. So, and the reason I'm comparing those two films is, so you take a film like ours, which is indie, no name, no sort of big Hollywood stars or names, and then a movie like Moonlight, which is still indie, beautiful material, but did have Naomi Harris, who, you know, is from the James Bond movie. So they had a star in it. they make that film, and then they submit that film to film festivals around the world. So they, I don't think they did Sundance or Cannes, but they got into another film festival, and they got into TIFF. Then it goes to TIFF, and there are distributors there who want to buy the film, and Moonlight got a lot of buzz. And so it got bought at TIFF, and then, you know, from there, you know, just kept going. Say a film like Brown Girl Begins, we didn't get into TIFF. We didn't get into any of the large film festivals. So then what we decided to do was, rather than go into the smaller film festivals where it probably wouldn't be seen or get as much prestige, is we decided to distribute the film ourselves. So it's opening across Canada, and in Brooklyn and in Los Angeles at two film festivals there. One in Brooklyn called BAM Cinematheque. It's at the Brooklyn Academy of Music under a sort of Black Superheroes program. And then in Los Angeles at the Pan-African Film Festival. So we did film festivals in that way strategically. If they weren't the big film festivals, we did film festivals where we know that's our audience. So if you have a film and you know your film is Afrofuturist sci-fi, you know, with a woman lead in it, then what you have to look at is, okay, so do I apply to the sci-fi film festivals? Do I apply to Black film festivals? Do I apply to women's film festivals? And we found for us that the best reception we had was at Black film festivals.
So I'm listening to you, I'm like, so it's a lot of actual groundwork and research you have to do in order to know which actual film festival is just right for you.
Yeah, and let me just give you this tip. You want to make sure you have a film festival strategy, because, for example, if our film had gone into a smaller film festival in Los Angeles, Pan-African Film Festival wouldn't have taken it. The film festivals in each city want to be the city that premieres your film. Okay. So our film premiered at Urban World in New York, and then it's going to premiere at the Pan-African Film Festival in Los Angeles. So just make sure when you're thinking about your strategy that you're, you know, make sure you go for the film festivals you want to be in first, because they won't take you if you've already premiered in that city.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. And what do most film festivals look for? I know how you broke it down with different categories such as sci-fi, you know, drama, Pan-African, things like that. But is there a niche that they're always looking for, or a specific screen or idea that they're always looking for?
Definitely there's not. Definitely not. In terms of an idea, they want buzz. They want buzz around that film, because that's going to bring prestige to them. Or if it's a very focused film festival like the Pan-African Film Festival, they want to support African-Canadian, African-American directors, right, mm-hmm. and filmmakers. So they're more of a sort of, supportive of the Black community. TIFF is looking for the next breakout film. Okay. That's what they want. The film with buzz, the next breakout. Usually it would have to have either a star behind it or a big distribution company behind it, or have generated a lot of buzz in its home country. So they would take a film from Jamaica or from Pakistan if it had generated a lot of buzz in their home country.
That makes a lot of sense. That definitely makes a lot of sense. And how would you say the film world has opened up to different communities? You know, I know you spoke a little bit about the Pan-African community and the Black community. What about like the LGBT community and the Hispanic community? Would you say that they are starting to open up a little bit when it comes to diversity?
Well, you know, it's so interesting. I just saw this thing about this discussion that was happening with women in Hollywood. And Dee Reese was there, and Jessica James was there, and Jill Soloway, who does Transparent, was there. And the whole discussion came up around race and LGBTQ challenges and homophobia. And it was interesting because it was a little microcosm, I think, of what's going on in the world. So there's this, as we know, this hashtag MeToo, you know, where women's voices are being heard, but there's also such a division between what's happening with white women and what's happening with women of color mm-hmm. and with Latino women and with LGBTQ communities. And what happened in that discussion was like, yeah, it's cool that we're moving ahead, But as we move ahead, we have to keep recognizing those differences and those challenges that are happening to our various sections of that community. And I think we still have a long way to go. Even within the Black community, I think we have a long way to go with LGBTQ. But I feel positive given the response that Moonlight had.
Okay. I just wanted to know because I see, you know, different things actually coming and actually making the big screen. So that's why I definitely wanted to know, like the movie Get Out, you know, that was a movie that was different. It was completely different. It wasn't something that, you know, we were used to seeing or used to seeing being on the big screen and getting as much buzz as it did. So that's why I wanted to know and ask a little bit about that.
But don't you think that film was genius?
Yeah.
Don't you think that film is genius exactly. In the sense that it couched all these political issues mm-hmm. within a horror?
Yes, exactly. And that's why I thought that, you know, they should have got more buzz at the Oscar. But, you know, we're not going to go into that. But I do want to ask you about that, too, about you being, you know, a director and an actor. How do you feel about the Oscars at this point in 2018? Do you still think it's relevant for someone to still want to win an Oscar, or do you think they should just do it for the love that they have?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things that I mean, when I started out, I was and still am an artist. But what I do appreciate is actually learning more and more about the business, because let's take a movie like Get Out, Jordan Peele's movie, that part of the reason it doesn't get into the Oscars is partly because it's a genre film and they see it as a genre film. And the Oscars tend to snub genre films. So anything that's like a horror or sci-fi, they tend to snub. What I think is great about something like Get Out is it has all these political messages in it that if the Oscars were not so mainstream, they would see beyond the genre and see the depth of that kind of film. So that speaks to that there's still an issue with who's deciding which films get nominated. Do I think that we need to be knocking on the Oscars door or just be doing it for the love? Here's my answer to that, is that each of us has to decide as an artist what level of compromise we can have. So, for example, in order to make I had to figure out how I was going to make a living while I was making this film. So I went and I directed a bunch of lifestyle television. Now, lifestyle was not speaking to my heart or my passion, but it was a way to make a living and it was a way to still be a director. And also, I think, to hone my craft. And I decided that I wasn't going to do certain shows. So I wouldn't do any show that required me to manipulate somebody to do something that they wouldn't want to do. Or I didn't do any show that I felt represented Black people in a negative way. But I did do shows that I thought were kind of vacuous, you know what I mean? Like, that didn't necessarily have heart. So I feel like each of us has to decide that path for ourselves in terms of what we need to do in order to keep our art going.
Definitely, man. I appreciate that. I love, and that was a truthful answer. Some people try to give a political answer, and you definitely gave a truthful answer. So I appreciate that, definitely. Once again, man, if you guys are tuning in right now, you're listening to Sharon Lewis. She is the director of Brown Girls Begins. I want to go ahead and jump into that once again. So let's jump into Brown Girls Begins. How did you come up with it? Where did the idea come from? Let's tell the people a little bit about that.
All right. So 20 years ago, I was in Los Angeles struggling as an actress. And couldn't get a job. And I went into Essawan, which is a beautiful Black bookstore in L.A. And I looked up on the shelf and I saw this name, Nalo Hopkinson. And Nalo is a friend of mine who, when we were sort of doing the Toronto art circuit, we would do it together. She would read her writing. I performed some of my writings. And I looked up and saw she wrote a book called Brown Girl in the Rain. I pulled it down. I started reading it. And it was this mad world of Caribbean sci-fi spirits happening in Toronto, dystopia, patois. And I read that book inside that bookstore, bought the book, and decided then that this story had to come to the screen. Fast track 20 years later, nobody wanted to do that film. Nobody said anybody would watch Black sci-fi. Nobody wanted to see a Black female protagonist. They were like, oh, you're a Black female director. You don't have enough. Like, it was a dystopia. Let me tell you, it was a dystopia trying to get this film made. So finally, in 2015, I said, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do it. So I did crowdfunding. I got a little bit of Arts Council money, and I adapted the novel down into a very, very small story about a young woman coming of age in this dystopia. She's got a call on the Caribbean spirits. She's got to choose between her love for Tony and her responsibility as a priestess to save her community. And that's the film that I made. It's been a journey.
That's what's up. And you didn't stop. I appreciate you getting through all those obstacles without stopping. Could you tell the people a little bit about what the film is about, or is that something you have to hold on to?
No. So it takes place in 2049, same year as Blade Runner, but our world looks very different. What has happened is the wealthy have fled the city of Toronto, and they have pushed the poor people onto an island off the mainland. And so most of the poor people who are living on this island off the mainland are Caribbean. And they have very little electricity, very little water, and no political governance, and drugs have kind of overrun the community. Now, this could be any city, right? This could be Kingston, Jamaica. This could be parts of Port of Spain, Trinidad. This could be parts of America. This could be parts of South America. These cities with very little political power and electricity and proper housing exists all over the world. Mm-hmm. So it takes place in a city like that. And then this young girl is told that she is the chosen one to save her community against a drug lord. And the only way she can do that is by calling on the spirits. And these are the same spirits that her mother went through this ritual and her mother died. So she's got to face her own fear and go through that ritual in order to save her community. She's got to be tough. She's got to be brave. And she's a young 19-year-old girl, you know? So it's her journey in trying to come of age and find herself.
I'm with you. And we all have that experience, especially as young women. We all have that experience. So do you say that some of the answers that we as young women have always been looking for can be in this movie?
Yes. This is my hope, is that when you see this film, you're like, right. I need to step up. Oh, that's how I need to step up. Oh, I got to honor my ancestors, but at the same time, look forward and move forward. Yes, that is my hope, is that when young women of color and young black women see this film, and women, period, will watch this film and say, that's me. I can do it. I can call on my community for strength. And that, I guess my belief as an artist is that we owe something to our community, because it's our community that raised us up.
No doubt. I agree with you on that one. And then also, did you have full creative control when it came to picking your cast and, you know, the settings and everything like that? Did you have full creative control over this project?
That was the beautiful part of having almost no budget and low budget. I didn't really have to answer to anybody. So I got to choose the locations. And in the casting process, I made a commitment that it would be a dark-skinned young black woman who would play the lead, because so many times that isn't the case. So I was really committed to that. And I found this beautiful, talented, complex actress. Her name is Muna Traore. She's now doing all kinds of things with BET. She's in a new series called In Contempt. But she did a fantastic job of embodying what it is to be a young black superhero.
Awesome. And how did you find her?
I hired a casting director, and we did auditions all across the city and all across the country. And she walked in, and I kind of knew she was it from the beginning. I just needed to match her up with the right people. I just needed to make sure her love interest fit and who her mom was fit. And so we went through that process. And she, I think she came in for like 3-4 auditions. She worked it. She worked it.
And would you say that now, and I'm not just going to say the millennial generation, but would you say the millennial generation and, you know, the people who are coming to these auditions now still take it as seriously as you may have, or your generation may have, when you guys were first entering, you know, the world of film and directing and writing, because it was so much lack of diversity back then? Would you say it's still being taken seriously?
Yeah, I know people dog millennials, but I gotta say, the millennials that I have met, what I love about them is they're always like triple, quadruple threats. Like Muna Traore is also a filmmaker, is also a producer. You know, I've got a team of young Black women marketing the film. Oyana Lalakin, who works with me, designed our T-shirt that says "The future is her." Andriana Chin, who works with me, is doing fantastic work on social media and has her own little blog. Like, what I love about millennials is that they seem to come from a place of "I deserve." That as young women of color and young Black women, they need to come from that place. They need to actually come from a place of, yeah, I deserve a seat at the table. Whereas I would say my generation came with, hey, can I please get a seat at the table? Hey, you know what I mean? Make some room for me. We were kind of asking permission because we were never given that privilege. You know, I kind of like this little attitude where it's like, I have a seat at the table.
Thank you for that compliment. You know what I mean? I'm gonna say thank you for all the millennials out there, because we're definitely in that mindset. Like, no, I deserve to be here. I can prove to you that I deserve to be here, and I won't stop until you understand that I'm going to be here. You know what I mean? You can accept me or not, but I'm still going to be right here. So definitely.
Look at the space you're taking up with Revive, right? Like, you are taking up space.
We have to, because we have to give, you know, different, we have to, and that's why I love what you're doing, you know, because it's like we're giving different platforms to give a different lens, you know, so you don't have to keep looking at through the same lens, hoping that, you know, one day something can happen. You can just see that you can go get it for yourself. You know, this is something, Revive is something that I started for myself. You with Brown Girl Begins is something that you started for yourself. Like you said, it was a project, it was a process, and you didn't stop, and you overcame all the obstacles that came your way. So that actually leads me into my next question with the future is her. What's up with that? I love those t-shirts. What's up with the t-shirts? Like, how did you come up with the t-shirt idea?
Well, we were looking at a tagline for the film. You know, we were like, what's the tagline for the film? What is it that we want to say? And Muna's on the poster, and she's this beautiful, strong woman, and it's a futuristic film, but it's not your typical sci-fi with CGI. And so we didn't want to have anything that was too sci-fi, you know? Mm-hmm. And when we looked at her, we were like, well, she's the future, right? Like, she's actually the future. And we were like, right. Like, the future is her. And then Oyen, we were like, let's come up with these t-shirts. Let's use a tagline on these t-shirts, because we really want, yes, I want everybody to see this film, but I really want young Black women and young women of color to see this film. It's for them. I made it for them. And so we're like, well, what would they, you know, would they wear, you know, kind of cool t-shirt? And so then the t-shirt design is "the future is her." And then if you look closely, it says "here." So a little E is the period. If you go to browngirlbegins.com, you can see our t-shirts. You can buy a t-shirt.
Awesome.
And we wanted that to be a message. Right, we wanted it to be a movement, that this is a movement, that it goes beyond the film. You know, that we need to rise up, keep being heard, keep being seen, keep telling the, you know, the feminist movement and everybody that's moving forward, that we're here, that we are the future.
Definitely. And I definitely, I'm looking at your t-shirt right now, and I love the wordplay. I see the E now. That is definitely some great wordplay right there.
Isn't that cute?
That is definitely cute. I have a question though, right? So as we're talking about, you know, the future is her, the future is here. What is your opinion about staying present, you know, staying in the moment? Because right now, your moment is here. You know, you're about to embark on a whole journey now that the film is about to be seen across the world. Do you plan on staying present during the whole situation? Or are you just going to, you know, think about everything that's going to happen down the line in the future? How do you feel about that?
I love that question, because part of our whole push with our campaign with this film was, we decided to do it during Black History Month. But we're rebranding Black History Month to say Black Future Month. And the reason we're doing that is not because we don't respect the past. We do. And we respect that we need to know. But what I have found as an artist is that oftentimes I'm being asked to tell those slave narrative stories. And those are the stories that are most comfortable for the mainstream. That they, you know, they want to see us as the help, or, you know, 12 Years a Slave. And I'm not dogging those films at all. Those stories need to be told. But I would like to challenge and say, hey, what if you saw us in the present? And if you saw us as the saviors of the future, what if your future depended on us? And so I, you know, the t-shirts are part of that and the film is part of that. And my own thinking is part of that, that yes, I stay here in the present, but I'm always moving forward. You know, so I know, you know, after the film, I'm developing a TV series called The Burn, which is about the actual place that Tijon, the main character, grows up in. And so I'm moving forward. I'm enjoying the present, but my eye is always, you know, moving forward.
I'm with you on that, man. Definitely. And so when it comes to just once everything wraps up and the film is done and everything is taken care of, you dotted all your I's, across all your T's, do you just say, whew, it's over, you take a break? Or what's next? You know what I mean? Once the film is done as a director, what's next for you? Do you, you know, you close up your chair, you say cut, and then what's next?
I don't know that as a storyteller, over, you know, so this is one, you know, for lack of a better word, baby that's gone out into the world. But, you know, I have another pressing story that I'm telling already. It's a feature film again, and it's a film noir. It's an African-American lesbian detective who loves Humphrey Bogart and, you know, kind of moves through the world thinking she's Humphrey Bogart. So I'm already on to the next story. I think probably most artists can relate to that. You've got a million stories inside of you, and it's a privilege to be able to tell them. So I'm already on to that. I'm already on to that next story, writing the script, getting the funding together, and then, like I said, the TV series. So I've always got another project going.
I'm with you on that, man. And I appreciate you, Ms. Lewis, for coming on the Revive platform today and just sharing your story and definitely dropping some gems for everyone who's inspiring to be, you know, something just like you or even better than you. So I definitely appreciate that. Can you let the people know how they can find you, how they can, you know, cop some t-shirts, your websites, how they can get in touch with you?
Well, big shout out and love to you for having me on the show. I so appreciate that. And for all those who want to experience The Future Is Her and The Future Is Here, you go to browngirlbegins.com and everything's there. The t-shirt, where the film's playing, how to get tickets. You know, if you're in the city, if you're in LA, if you're in Brooklyn, and if you're not, how to get the DVD.
Yes, I appreciate that. And once again, can you go ahead and drop that website for us again?
Yeah, browngirlbegins.com. All one. Browngirlbegins.com.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I wish you many blessings in your future endeavors, and I hope you have a great week.
Thank you. Much love.
Out. Peace. That just wrapped up a great interview with Sharon Lewis, man. Brown Girl Begins. Make sure you guys check it out and definitely go check out her website at www.browngirlbegins.com. Make sure you guys go spread some love over there. I know that is going to be an amazing project, man. Make sure you guys go just spread love. That's what we need. Today is Sunday, man. Wake up, man. Wake up, wake up, wake up. We're about to come next live with your boy Keith Taylor from the Left Side of Politics. I'm excited to be speaking with Keith, man. We haven't spoke with Keith in a while, so I know today is going to be incredible. A lot of energy in the air. We're going to be getting some politics with these actual factuals. We're going to go to a quick commercial break. Right after this quick commercial break, we'll be up next with your boy Keith Taylor for What's Buzzing. You know what time it is to meet your girl POC. Click that link in my bio.
credit card, known to many as a mere modern convenience, though the truth is far more disturbing. This little piece of plastic and metals is a common commodity in the American household. You may have seen your mother buying groceries with one, or using it to treat herself to a brand new vacuum cleaner, and thought little of it. But looks can be deceiving, and this mother's little helper is quite the deceiver. You see, it may seem easy to pay for things with this card, but soon you will learn that there is a price for frivolous spending, and you will be led down a dark path, the path of debt.
What does Martin Luther King Jr., Booker T. Washington, Langston Hughes, Oprah Winfrey, W.E.B. Du Bois, what do they all have in common? They all attended an HBCU.
Once again, reviveisalive.com, or you can go directly to TuneIn. You can either download the app or go to the website and just search Time for an Awakening. Hit Meet Your Girl POC live on these airways, reviving these airways each and every Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And I need you guys to wake up with me. Give me a call, 215-490-9832. Once again, that number is 215-490-9832. Or you can hit me up Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at revive_POC. Leave me a comment, slide in my DMs. It don't matter, man. I need to know what you guys are thinking. I want to hear your opinion, your perspectives, and your ideas on whatever we may be talking about here on Revive, man. Revive is a show for the people. We're trying to revive the people each and every time we get on these airways. So definitely just give us a call, man. Definitely give us a call. And you already know I'm going to say subscribe to that newsletter. Subscribe to that newsletter today. You can do that also at reviveisalive.com. And also check out our news stories. We put up some new news stories for you guys each each and every week for you to check out throughout the week. I'm also going to be uploading some new news stories today, so make sure you guys stay tuned to that. And if you are a freelance journalist or a blogger and you're looking for somewhere to store your content, revivesalive.com is the place for your content to be stored. You hear me? You already know what time it is. We about to get into it with my boy Keith Taylor from the Left Side of Politics for What's Buzzing, man. I'm excited to be speaking with him today. You already know what time it is.
What's Buzzing? Lost in a world full of words, or a combination of which enters me. On to rants such as What's Buzzing? What's amazing is what a large world this is. Today in this world, we are either talking about the something, the no thing, and what's buzzing. Current events, let's talk about it. You have an opinion, let's talk about it. What's buzzing?
Yo, Keith, how you feeling today, man? How you feeling today, Keith?
What up?
What
it's
up?
Been too long. Like,
way too
Merry
long.
Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Birthday, Happy Independence
that.
Day.
Yes.
All that.
Feliz Navidad. How you feeling, man? You've been working, though. I ain't mad at you, Keith, because you've been working.
I'm out here on the West Coast.
Yes.
And I'm sorry. The West Coast is the best coast.
How's
but
the weather out
here
there?
Living the California lifestyle. I'm
that
just
dream.
California dreaming, you
yes,
know?
Yes, definitely. How is that weather?
One weird thing about California is that you get all four seasons in a day. So we have come to conclude by my forecasting predictions
that if
the sun is not up, you need a jacket on. It's cold outside. But if the sun is up, we can go to the pool, we can hit the beach, we can ride down Sunset, we can do whatever you want to do. But as soon as that minute that sun goes down, oh, you need a jacket on.
It's a ride.
Get you a little frigid.
A little frigid. So what you been eating out there, man? I know Cali got some good food. How you been eating out there?
Right now, you know, still trying to get adjusted to the city and just trying to find, like, some unique Cali things. You know, just the general seafood is pretty good. I had to go get some lasagna, a little pasta. But it's pretty good, you know?
Okay.
It's chilling.
So it's treating you right. Cali's treating you right.
Oh, Cali is nothing. Cali love. I mean, they made a song about it.
Oh, my God.
So, you gotta love.
So what's been going on with the politics, though, Keith, man? They done shut the government down since you've been off work. See, now I'm throwing shades. Since you've been off work, they've been shutting the government down.
See?
Donald
see
Trump is out here doing whatever.
When TLS is not,
you see
TLS and Revive is not together. You see what happens when we're not linking up?
They're not listening to us, man. They're not listening to us.
They not. So, Republicans are blaming Democrats. Democrats are blaming Republicans. Public has no idea what's going on. And the government shut down for a couple of days. Shut down over the weekend. Shut down into Monday. Reopened on Tuesday. And there were three major things that were really holding up a deal. And those three things were Democrats really wanted to extend DACA, as we talked about back in September. And Republicans wanted spending. So increase in military spending, I should say, and really funding for their border wall. So back in around September, October, after Trump said that DACA would end in March and gave the ball to Congress, some House Representative Democrats and Trump kind of came up with like a verbal agreement. Like, okay, if you reauthorize DACA, okay, we'll fund the border wall. I'm like, all right, cool. So Trump then gets pressured by some hardline immigration lobbyists, and then came to the table again and said, well, no, you fund the border wall and you support this legislation and hardline immigration tactics, and then we'll give you DACA.
All right, hold on, Keith. Hold on, Keith. So let's stop. Let's start with just the first point, just to break it down. So the first thing was that you said that they asked him to fund the border wall.
Yeah, so essentially, President Trump would agree to keep DACA going, continue funding for DACA, mm-hmm. and in turn, Democrats would sign off on $25 billion for Trump to build his border wall.
Okay, so that's the first deal.
Okay. That's the first verbal agreement that we all came to. It was like, all right, you know what? Cool, we can do that. You give us DACA, we'll give you the border wall.
Okay, all right. So what was the second agreement?
Trump then talked to his compadres.
His compadres. That was a great that was great wordplay.
Trump talked to his compadres, and they were like, no, you need to be a little bit more hardline on immigration. So Trump calls up Pelosi and says, hey, nah, this ain't going to work. In order for me to sign off on DACA, we're now going to have to be tougher on immigration, and you're going to have to give me this border wall in exchange for DACA. Now, one of the tough ways that they were going to be hardline immigration is that they wanted a plan to make it easier to deport illegal immigrants in this country from countries that do not touch the United States. So essentially, if you weren't from Mexico or Canada, the administration wanted to just swing by and just scoop you up. Just make it that much more easier.
What you mean?
Put you out the country.
What you mean? Like, explain that to me.
So what I mean is, you know how right now it's kind of hard a little bit to deport anybody. Mm-hmm. But with this new hardline immigration tactics, let's say if you were from El Salvador or you were from somewhere in South America, administration, Homeland Security, ICE could just now swing by, scoop you up, and send you back to your native land.
And this is only if you was working in Canada or in Mexico.
Yeah, unless you come from Canada or Mexico.
Okay, so if you are from Canada or Mexico, they could not come scoop you up.
Yeah, they couldn't come scoop you up. And then there's usually a whole legal process behind, like, you getting deported and going back to your home country. But if you weren't from Canada or Mexico, the two countries that border America, then it's easy money for them to come along, scoop you up, and then send you back to your original country.
Okay.
So Democrats were like, whoa, hold on. We can't support that because now you're breaking up families. And now you're putting essentially the same people that we have fought to keep here, even though you're providing this temporary win of processing over 700,000 people who met the DACA criteria. Plus, Trump said that he would also support giving path citizenship to people who didn't sign up for DACA this current year, but who meet the criteria. So that equates to about 1.8 million people. So he said that, all right, I'll give 1.8 million people a path to citizenship if you support these two new policies. So that's like step one.
Okay.
Another bucket of which held up spending.
Yo, Keith, I appreciate you for really breaking this down. I honestly, truly appreciate you breaking this down because I know a lot of people were confused about what was going on. Like, what the hell was going on? What is this and what is that? And you are really breaking it down. Good. I'm grateful that you're on today when it came to those two points because me, myself, I kind of intertwined them. I didn't know it was like one thing that was proposed and then he went to go speak with his colleagues and then something else came out of that conversation which made them propose a second, you know, proposal. I did not know that. So I appreciate you for breaking that down for me, myself.
Oh, yeah. This is like, you know how sometimes they say like backdoor deals happen in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Really, if we're being honest with ourselves, that's how a lot of things get done is through backdoor deals. But you know how you go back and you talk to your friends and be like, yo, so what y'all think about this?
They're like, nah,
and your friends
nah,
be
nah.
like, oh, your friends be like, oh, no, girl, better not do that.
Nah, you no, too sweet. That was a sweet about. Deal. Nah, try to get some more out of it. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, so see how much you can push. And what's crazy is to even start all of this off, right, this is the first time that one party has control essentially both houses of Congress and have not passed a bill in like 40 years. So, as we know, Republicans own the House and the Senate. Mm-hmm. So, the bill passed the House with overwhelming majority. So they really didn't need it. The tough part
is what
Senate,
the bill is, though.
Where you,
can you tell the people what the bill actually is?
The what?
The bill that passed. Can you tell them what the bill that passed?
So they temporarily passed the defense funding. They temporarily passed just a budget deal. They kept immigration off the table. So they essentially going to save it and try to work on something until February. Kept all the appropriations in. It took out those areas that we just talked about. So there's nothing in there about DACA. There's nothing in there about the border wall and funding for the border wall. And there's nothing in there about path to citizenship or closing immigration loopholes. So essentially those big topics that really held up the bill, they essentially delayed the conversation so
that
they could get a little bit more time to
how was that
talk about
though,
and come up with. You said what?
How is that effective? So they passed the bill for a short period of time, but the bill that they passed, the budget bill, let's talk about exactly what bill it is. The budget bill that they passed, so they passed the budget bill without these key essentials in there.
Yeah. So what happened is essentially they're procrastinating, kicking the can down the road. Because in less than 2 weeks, on February 13th, they have to make a decision again about what the government is going to do or the government shut down again. So the term is, or they call it stopgap bills, mm-hmm. because the government, as we know, everything runs on a fiscal calendar year. So the government's fiscal calendar year ends and begins on October 1st. So since October 1st, Congress has not passed a fiscal calendar year budget bill for all the departments. So essentially what they do is they pass these short-term stopgap bills that, okay, we'll fund the government to this date, and on this date, we'll just come up with another date, or we'll fund the government to this date now. And during that time is when they're supposed to be debating these big, highlight key topics, and it's not effective. Because one of the problems, and this also goes back to the bill, and one of the things that they were deferring on is military spending, at least for the Pentagon, military spending is what Republicans wanted. Democrats wanted an equal amount of spending for domestically.
Facts.
And it's hard for the military to plan out their fiscal year about what they're spending money on, about who they're funding, about what they're doing, because they're only funded now until February 13th.
Let me say something real quick, and I don't mean to cut you off because I want you to keep going, but I just want you to break little things down so people can truly understand what you're saying. So when you say that the Democrats want to have equal spending for domestic, when you say domestic, can you break that down so they understand that, you know, not 90% of the people who are listening to this show right now fall under that domestic category?
So consider like welfare programs.
Yes.
Social Security benefits. Mm-hmm. A big thing was children's health insurance programs.
Yes.
Which originally, and this is another thing they also deferred on. So the Children's Health Insurance Program provides insurance for low-income families who can't essentially afford health insurance for their children. And originally, as Trump came out in support of it, it was like, okay, we'll do this. And then as it started to get closer to sign off on it, he got cold feet and backed out and said, no, people need to find out their own way to do things. That's not for the government to fund. As Republicans typically feel, their stances are that the government should not provide subsidies for people at all.
And that's why I love Bernie Sanders, man.
Like the government should not provide subsidies. That if you got yourself in a situation, you need to get yourself out of it. We did it. Pull yourself up by the bootstraps and find a way to make things happen.
Thank you for breaking that down, because I just wanted people to understand what you meant when you said that, you know, the Democrats were fighting for equality for, you know, domestics. But keep going. Please finish what you were saying.
Yeah. So they keep passing these stopgap bills that temporarily fund the government to X date. And then during the meantime, they try to work out a deal, a long-term deal that funds the government through whatever programs. So temporarily, they procrastinated and put it off. And then now are trying to work through the discussions or disputes that they're having in order to get the government funded and in order to find a pathway to citizenship for these illegal immigrants.
Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is, though, with the DACA program, DACA is pretty much set up to you know, have a safety net or have some security to the people who were brought over here illegally, but they have been over here for a very long time. So now their process is becoming legal, or their parents were illegal. So as children, you know, they stayed around because, you know, it was nowhere for them to go back, right?
Right. And yeah, so DACA, if we revisit DACA, DACA was set up because as a child, you aren't cognitive of what's going on. So your parents brought you over here illegally, as your parents were illegal, when you were a young child, and essentially you grew up in America, but you wasn't born in America. And DACA was to allow those children a pathway to citizenship because you had no choice in the matter of what was going on.
Exactly.
So it was another way to provide pathway to citizenships for people who were illegal immigrants. And the Trump administration wanted to end that, just like the diversity visa lottery that we talked about when the terrorist attack happened in New York, when a guy ran through one of the parks and hit a bunch of people with a car.
Mm-hmm.
He came over to America through the diversity visa lottery. And Trump said he was going to end that as well. So what he did with that was and say, okay, well, we'll keep the diversity visa lottery, but the way we allocate these visas, we have to change. So now we'll reallocate visas, and people who have families or high-skilled labor workers from different countries or high-skilled immigrants from different countries would take priority over all other countries, where now the visa lottery essentially targets countries that have low acceptance rate into America,
mm-hmm.
and try to get those people from those countries to come to America. But that would all change
with Donald Trump.
Oh, that's the plan right now, to change with Donald Trump. And Democrats are like, oh, well, we were okay with giving you DACA for the border wall, but all these other hardline immigration tactics that you're choosing right now is not what we're willing to do. And that's why Republicans are blaming Democrats, because they're saying, well, you're holding up. You said you wanted DACA. We gave you DACA. And now you're holding up the people who are DACA. You're trying to hold these DACA people as hostage negotiators compared to originally just DACA and the wall. But there's so much more behind the scenes that's going on with that whole process as to why Democrats didn't sign off on it. And even though Republicans own the Senate, you need 60 votes in order to pass
a bill
in the Senate. So they essentially needed 9 more Democrats on board to go with that. And on top of that, some Republican senators even voted no to what Donald Trump was proposing, or the White House was proposing.
As they should, like, really, as they should. So would you say that, you know, this government shutdown was a pretty much, you know, fault from both sides, both parties? Or would you, you know, in your own personal opinion, pick a party who actually was at fault in the government shutdown, you know, last week?
I think both parties are to blame. It would have been honest, both parties are to blame. I think Donald Trump and the lack of governance has allowed this to come here, because if you were really on it, we would have had this discussed, or at least 90% done, September, October, when this program ended, taking charge and really governing like a president should. I think it's the Democrats' fault, because then they should have came to the table and said, all right, this, this, and this, even though I know they had their agreement back in, their verbal agreement back in September, but But as we all know, things in Washington change day by day. And they should have said, okay, we'll give you this, this, and this. No, we're not conferring on that. But all right, how about this? And I think they should have came to the table with Republicans and said, okay, all right, let's sit down. If Donald Trump's not giving it to us, all right, let's sit down together. Let's work this out. If you give us CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, and you continue to fund these programs and give us DACA, and we restructure the diversity visa lottery a little bit here and there, then, okay, whatever. We'll sign off on this border wall, things like that. And I can't say that they didn't, because two senators came to Donald Trump with a bipartisan deal of immigration, and Donald Trump was like, no.
What's the name
there
of
wasn't
the
much
senators?
Details about what they came to the table with. It was kind of like a closed-door meeting. But it was reported that two senators did come to the table.
Who are the two
and said,
senators?
Okay, we kind of get... Go ahead.
Who are the two senators?
Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham.
Okay.
So the way it was reported, or the way they described the bill, was saying that their bill basically just said that the sun rises in the morning or that they're fishing the ocean. So I kind of took it as this bill was just stated blatantly and direct, and that it really didn't cover any protections or anything. It's not much details about it, but I can say that at least some senators came to the table.
I think
it's Republicans' fault for not holding Donald Trump accountable and allowing him to dictate everything instead of saying, all right, whatever, this is what's going to go on. If we do this and that, okay, cool, we can get a bill done and passed. So I think blame is to go for everybody.
I'm with you on that one, man. And I'm kind of not even on the – I'm not on anyone's side either, because I don't like the first agreement. I mean, I do understand that you got to lose to win and this, that, and the third sometimes, but I'm not with – you know, you give us DACA and we sign that border wall. I'm not okay with that, because at the end of the day, us 97% is going to have to pay for that with the taxes, especially after they already changed, you know, the taxes and everything like that. How do you think that that's going to affect us as people, just in your personal opinion, if the Democrats actually give up that border wall?
To be honest, I don't think it'll matter. It really won't. Because right now, as Americans, we pay for stuff, or supposedly we pay for stuff with our taxes that you may not like, that I may not like, but yet we still pay our taxes. Our taxes are still going to come out of our check. Same, some people hate war. Some people are totally opposed to war. But they work, and the minute they get paid, those federal taxes come out. You're 33%, you're 25%. And there's nothing you can do about it. And if you try not to pay taxes, we all know what happens with that. Check out Wesley Snipes. The IRS.
Donald Trump got away with it. Donald Trump got away with it, Keith. It's a way. We got to
what's crazy is, and if we're even going back to this topic, when people say, oh, we don't want to raise taxes because the rich shouldn't have to be taxed, why should we tax somebody for making more? Let's be completely honest with ourselves. Rich people find a way to get out of taxes. They do. They have a way, or they have a system in which they do not pay as much taxes as we do. The people who really get taxed or hurt is us. And they find ways. Like Mitt Romney paid, what, barely 15% when he was running for president, as his tax return showed. Elon Musk 1 year had a reported income of $0. But yet this man is a billionaire. They find ways through tax loopholes to not pay as much taxes as the ordinary citizen. And that's what it is. They find ways to beat the system.
And there are laws out there. I know for a fact there are laws out there. We just have to do our research, because
it's something. It's something in the water for real, for especially when it comes to like these whole bankruptcy scandals and everything of that nature. It's a way to get around it, and I feel like more and more people are going to find a way to get around it now that it's being more exposed, to know that, you know, these politicians and, you know, some of these entertainers are not paying, because Donald Trump is an entertainer prior to he, you know, becoming a politician. He was an entertainer and he still wasn't paying taxes. So I'm sure, you know, there are ways, and I feel like more and more people are going to find that out, because I read somewhere that paying taxes is voluntary. Like, you volunteer to pay taxes as a citizen. There's nothing in, you know, it's no law or something out there that states that you must pay taxes. It's like a contract that you sign. I don't want to quote it and be completely wrong, but it's something out there, man, Keith. I'm trying to tell you, it's definitely something out there. But when it came to the bill that they did pass up until the 13th, do you know what the budget was for that? How much it was?
No, I did not, actually. I'm sorry.
And when it comes to the budget that they're trying to pass, did they ever put out a number in general with the budget they were trying to pass for the fiscal year?
Not that I know of. Okay. I just know they were just talking about a budget.
Okay. Because I want to know.
But it's definitely in the hundreds of billions of dollars.
Yeah, because if you think about it, even if you add the border wall to the budget, I mean, do you think that that's going to, just once again, your personal opinion, do you think them adding the border wall to the budget, let's say the Dems allow them to pass it, do you think that it's going to create American jobs, jobs for us Americans?
Yeah, I think it can, but it all goes back to who's given the contract to do it, really. And if you only designate this contract for Americans, then yeah, American citizens get that. But if you designate this contract to the lowest bidder, and government funding, then that can be anybody. That can be Mexican immigrants from Mexico who could be illegal immigrants who could be working on the wall, which would be ironic case. It's like, okay, well, hold on. You want to build this border wall to keep illegal immigrants out, but yet you have illegal immigrants working on the border wall. How does that work?
I would actually like that idea, though.
My whole question would be, if I could ask Donald Trump one thing, well, we already have a border wall in place, yet people still get into America illegally. Like, how does that work? But, hey, who are we?
Who are we, man? We are somebody who's putting out that news, definitely putting out that news. But I want to ask a question that you guys asked on your page earlier this week. You asked about, it was a poll that you guys did, and I thought it was pretty interesting. I actually want to talk about two posts that you guys put up, but I want to ask about this one first because it was kind of catchy. It caught my eye. It said, should it be legal to clone human beings? Like, where did you guys get that from, and why did you guys put that question out there for the people this week?
Chris, our social media guy, he usually comes up with about 7 questions a day. And what he does is he'd be like, okay, well, I'm filling the poll today, or I'm filling questions today. And he'll send a list of questions and polls and say, all right, well, which one are you all thinking? So in the group chat of messages, we'd be like, okay, well, current climate is kind of trending towards this. All right, well, let's ask about this. We haven't asked this. And just see what people say. And that's usually how our questions get born. I mean, he comes up with his own questions. Usually he's just sitting there dreaming. And he'll write them down and send them to us. And that's usually how our questions and polls kind of get started. And we're like, all right, put that out. Let's see what he responds. And we try to encourage debate and just challenge the response. Not in a negative way, but like, okay, well, you say we should build a border wall. Well, people are already crossing the border. Why should we continue to build a border wall if people are still getting through?
And
we have a border wall already. And
they're going to find a way to climb it. They're going to find a way to get over top of that wall.
Yeah, they are. They're going to get over it. They're going to go over it, or they're going to go under it. It's one or the other.
Fact. And I can see them going under it before they go over it, because people are going straight through the tunnels. People are going straight underground now. That's the way to get in through.
Right. Underground mixtapes, baby.
So they really not thinking. I don't think that those Republicans or Democrats are truly thinking when they talk about this border wall, because it's no way, unless they like start deep, deep, deep under that soil. You know what I mean?
But think about it, though. If somebody tells you you're about to build a wall, And you're not really thinking about it. You hype. You're like, oh, yeah, well, she's going to keep all the immigrants out. But then, as people like us who are thinking deeper, we're like, well, hold on. Slow your roll, Pep. Slow your roll. Slow down. Like, we already got a wall, and people are digging under it.
But at
a rally, it sounds good.
It definitely sounds good, but I feel like these people are going to find a way. Trust me, Keith. And this technology is innovation out here, man. It's drones out here. It's so many different things that can definitely take place when it comes to this border wall that I don't think is going to be effective or efficient, because people are going to find a way, definitely. And then you got, man, no, Donald Trump ain't ready. He's not ready, and I think we're about to waste hundreds of billions of dollars on this wall. But I wanted to ask you guys about this last question that you put up on your platform earlier this week, when you guys asked, and this is something that I wanted to go in on, but I was like, nah, I'm not going to go in on it. It said, do you think people on welfare should be eligible for medical marijuana cards? What's up with that, Keith?
You should have went in. What's your take? Talk to us.
Oh, yeah, I think they should be able to get medical marijuana cards. That's more of the reason why they're on welfare, because some of them are on welfare just because of Obamacare. You know what I mean? Think about it. You got how many people who are going through different medical circumstances and situations that cannot afford to have a medical marijuana card that can help them on so many different levels? Picture how many people have anxiety, panic attacks, and all different things that's going on, but they cannot afford to enter into that medical marijuana game. But if you can be able to get that on welfare, federal funding, that would be amazing. You know what I mean? Of course, you got to do some vetting. Don't just give out any kind of cards to anybody. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, I think that would be super beneficial for the people who cannot afford it. That's why they created Obamacare, the American Affordable Care Act, because we can't afford it, people. What's wrong with
right.
y'all? Like, what do you
but
think?
But then you will have Republicans who argue the opposite. Well, why should we allow a drug to be legal?
Or why?
That's why we have this conversation right now about Jeff Sessions and talked about how marijuana is bad and marijuana should always be illegal. And no, it would not be legal at the federal level. But we got a whole nation of opioids going on in America that's now an epidemic. But that's a national crisis. And people argue that saying, well, if you're on welfare, how can you allow to be doing drugs?
It's not a drug, though, and I think that's why more and more people are, you know, being more familiar with it and being more friendlier with it, because it's not really a drug. It's more of an herb. It's definitely an herb. It's a plant that comes from the earth. And I'm not sitting here trying to, you know, back marijuana. I mean, that's what it is.
Advocating for marijuana legalization.
No, definitely. I can't wait until it becomes legal, recreational and medical. I'm not even going to hold you. But at the same time, I do think that people who are not able to afford the medicine that they need to abstain, shout out to my man Bernie Sanders, I'm feeling a burn always. I think that they should be able to get that on the American Affordable Care Act. You know, being a part of that situation, I really think that it should be implemented, because there are a lot of people, you know, who have cancer or who have, you know, different medical circumstances that are being pushed to the side or just given pills and up in their dosage in the pills and different things like that, instead of just treating them exactly what they need. Picture, I mean, people, you know, who have the actual funding, the money, the monetary value to go to get, you know, medical marijuana research on them and their situation, and then is able to be able to live and tell that story, versus the people who are not able to
right.
afford that. You know what I'm saying? So I definitely think it can be a way. It can be a way to make that happen. But, yes, vetting processes do have to go and be implemented, because everybody coming in be like, yo, I got anxiety. You know what I'm saying? So I agree.
Right.
But I love that question. I was like, yo, look at them. I love that question. I think that was something that should have got the people going. I wanted to go in on that one, but I didn't want to be all rude on it. Because I was like, hell yeah.
It ain't. Ain't no such thing as being rude. You know, we're here to encourage intellectual debates. So, as long as you're just not on there and be like, yeah. Just yeah, because I said so. Like, no, bro. Slow down, bro.
Definitely. And before we let you go today, Keith, definitely let the people know how they can find you, everything you guys got going on with TLS, anything you guys coming up. Do you guys have anything new coming up in the next couple of...
So, I'm so glad you said this, because as we know, next month is Black History Month.
Hey.
So we're going to be celebrating the whole month. And we're going to be doing a Lift Every Voice Challenge.
Okay.
So, basically, hashtag Lift Every Voice, make a video of you singing. And we do have a prize for the winner. Can't disclose what that is yet, but trust me, it is very special. So, definitely get that out. I mean, if you want to get in, let us say a little tunes, you know.
What you got for us? You want to give us a little sample, Keith? You want to give us a little sample?
I mean, you know, I left my days behind me when I decided to go to college. You know, B2K112 wanted me, but I was like, you know what? I got to further my education. I can't live this life on the road. I'm too young, you know? I might come out of retirement, you know? But
I could definitely see you singing, man. I cannot wait till that video uploads. I already know you about to get a video popping.
Hey, I might get the people what they want.
Little Casey JoJo.
But, right, a little, hey, little. You might see me blow a tune or two. But
how they can find you.
So we're gonna have a Lift Every Voice challenge. So make sure y'all go out there. If y'all do, make a video, hashtag Lift Every Voice on Facebook and Instagram so that we can see that, and best one will be reposted. And we'll also have a grand prize for the winner. Still doing questions of the day. Getting back into the videos, it's been a long month, especially with me moving across the country. Haven't made any videos, but starting tomorrow, we'll be getting back to weekly videos, daily videos, and politics with the Trump segments that we're going to begin having. Questions of the day that you know we have on Facebook and Instagram. Make sure y'all follow us on both platforms. TLS Politics on both platforms. If you follow us on Twitter, it's TLS_Politics. You can also give us suggestions for questions of the day or polls that we have. Definitely shoot us an email at theleftside@gmail.com. TheLeftside@gmail.com. And we also have two positions open right now. One is for a policy researcher and one is for a social media director.
Awesome.
So if you're interested, definitely hit us up on Facebook or hit us in that email or hit us on IG in the DMs. As Gotti said, it goes down in the DMs. So just we're out here just trying to make a move and try to be part of the Revive platform and really give you all these actual factuals.
No doubt, no doubt. And I was just going to say, Keith, if you actually get something together for me, type something up with the image, I can actually put that on the website for you guys that you guys are looking for, you know, two people to fill these positions. I can get that up on the website for you guys.
Copy that.
I got you. I definitely got you, man. Definitely just send me that email. I appreciate you coming on each and every time, blessing these airways with me, man. We need more people like you. You are filled with information that's just ready to be heard, man. I thank you, Keith, and I appreciate you, and I already know we're about to continue to kill it. 2018 is ours, man.
Hey, it's our year. We're changing the world. We're going to change the world, Craig.
And you on the other side of the world.
One listener at a time.
For real, you on the other side of the world, so I'm kind of jealous, man. I hope you have a great Sunday, man. Keep doing your thing.
All right, take care.
No doubt. That wraps up another segment of What's Buzzing with your boy Keith Taylor from the Left Side of Politics, man. He always comes and drops some actual factuals for you guys. He actually dropped some gems on me today. He broke some things down that I didn't even know myself. So I definitely appreciate him always coming through, dropping them gems, and bringing those actual factuals for the listening audience today, man. If you guys ever have a question for Keith, you can give us a call during that segment at any time. Once again, that number is 215-490-9832. Do not be scared. If you got a question, he got the answer. Trust me when I tell you. Also, you can hit us up over Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Revive_POC. We're going to go to a quick commercial break before we wrap up here on Revive Radio today, man. Today was a great show, man. We had a great guest. We had your boy Keith Taylor dropping some gems. Yo, Harmony, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling well informed and good. Definitely.
You better get ready for this inspirational, motivational, man. You got to get the people started off right. We're going to go to this quick commercial break. You already know what time it is. It's me, your girl, POC. I'm reviving airways all the way to 1 p.m., man. Stay tuned. Stay locked.